Welcome back to a brand new episode of Rebuilding the Palisades podcast hosted by DSI. I am Taylor Denser, and we are here with the illustrious Beth Cowan of Beth Cowan Project Management. Beth, thank you so much for your time today and joining us.
You're welcome.
So, you know, we have a lot of great conversation that we're going to go through, so let's dive right in. So tell us how you got started in this business.
I got started right out of college. I was poor and I needed a job, and I worked for a big real estate development company. But I had good writing skills and speaking skills from college, and just got sort of plucked out of the group. And so I spent the first 13 years of my career in high-rise development. So I built high-rise buildings and really learned about construction and process, old school, really, you know, by old builders, really taught you the process. And then I eventually went into residential, high-end residential, by accident, but that's how, that was the...
And where were the high-rises? What city was that in?
Yeah, well, it was a Chicago-based company, so I worked all over the country with development teams, but I concentrated mostly in Century City, downtown, Beverly Hills, so...
Okay, perfect. So... You're very experienced in estate development management. So how did you develop all of that experience? I mean, I know you just talked about, you know, your experience with high-rises, but talk to us some more about that experience.
Yeah, so it was I used that high-rise experience, that big construction experience, and translated it into residential. And residential is actually very, when it's high-end residential, very complicated, and you work with engineers, and you know, but it, I was able to kind of use that big build mentality, but in residential, and elevate it, and elevate the budgeting process and the scheduling process, and sort of take that commercial mentality and bring it to residential. And so the homes I started with were really quite large, $40, $50 million budgets, you know, 18 years ago, which that was a big home then.
Very neat, very neat. So... Your role is kind of foreign to a lot of people, right? So people know, they understand what an architect does, what a builder does. What's the role of a construction project manager?
Right. So that's the right phrase. I started as a construction manager, and then it became really a project manager because you're managing the whole project. Mm-hmm. Today, this role is called owner's rep, an owner's representative, because you represent the owner, but you're still managing the whole project. Mm-hmm. So you manage the architects, the engineers, the consultants like DSI, the builders. You manage all of those people, and you report to the owner. And it's the owner's architect, or the owner's business manager, or the owner's attorney, whomever his team, their team is. So it's sometimes viewed as like a luxury layer, but it's really becoming more and more a necessity. And, you know, we have, because that's our skill set, we're able to manage everybody. It's much like a quarterback on a football team or a producer of a movie. It's very similar skill set.
Absolutely. And with that comes a lot of responsibility to take care of, you know, you've got a lot of people that are collaborating on an effort. So that definitely puts some pressure on you, I'm sure, as well. High stakes situations.
Yes.
So talk to me, how do you charge for these services? How does that work?
Well, so if I come in the project early, there are three phases to a job: pre-construction, construction, post-construction. That's ideal. And so I charge monthly for each phase. And pre-construction is light. The team is doing their work, and I'm just sort of watching them and sort of steering them a little bit. Construction is a heavier period, and I'm on the job sites every week, and I'm working with the teams. There's not only weekly job site meetings, but there's meetings with everybody else. And then post-construction is the clients moved in, and we're just closing out warranties, closing out the books, making sure they're comfortable, making sure they know how to live in the house, and then we sort of kind of fade out from there.
Sure. So you sort of mentioned before, you know, you take care of a lot, almost everything on behalf of the owner. Mm-hmm. So walk me through a luxury home budget.
So that's such a good question, because even with the Palisades Fires, people call and say, you know, this is how much money I have to build a house. But that, it's not, you don't just, you know, it's not wood and concrete and carpet. And it's permits, it's people. So that's the very first thing we do is we develop a budget and we sort of take a temperature. We say, this is how much this house, as you have it designed, is going to cost. And like, do you have the stomach for it? Do you want to keep going forward? And they may say, oh, no. I thought it was going to be $1,000 a foot all in. No. When the contractor tells you $1,000 a foot, that's not counting AV. It's not counting your soft costs. It's not counting security. It's certainly not counting your furniture. So, you know, in the city of LA, we have a lot of permits. We have testing and inspections. There are a lot of other components to buildings. So we develop that from the very first minute, and we have historical data, and we sort of know, and we develop the budget, and we say, this is what it's going to cost. Can you go for before we start any construction? They have to sign off on that number, and it includes everything we can possibly think of. We put in furniture storage, and you know, a contingency, always a little bit of a contingency for things that come up.
Sure. And do you find that people often overlook maintenance costs after the fact?
I mean, we talk about maintenance as we're going through, as they're picking out materials, and we say, well, that wood is beautiful, but you'll be sanding it every 6 months. And if you're good with that, that's great. Or that stone is not good around a pool because the chlorine's going to eat it away, or whatever. We do talk about that all the way through. Mm-hmm. And we've finished houses, and the clients have called and said, you know, like, who's going to do all of this?
Right.
So we try to keep everybody informed along the way, and that's part of what we do.
Absolutely. So, you know, at the beginning of a project, clients tend to be conservative and they're watching their budget, mm-hmm. and they think they have it all figured out, right? And then as the project goes along, halfway through, it gets out of control. They're adding things, and next thing you know, you're over your budget. Mm-hmm. So why is that? How does that happen?
Right. So that's our job, is to say, we try to keep them disciplined, and we tell them this is your budget, but you have to stay disciplined. And if they make changes, we say, before they do make the change, we say, this is going to cost this in money and in time. Do you want to go forward? So they make the choices, and then they can't say, well, I didn't know, because it's our job to tell them.
Right. Absolutely. You have it all thought out and all planned out, mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So you tend to work with the same people on your projects more or less. Why is that?
Well, there's only so many of us that work at this level, mm-hmm. first of all. But also you start to trust your team. You know who can perform and who can deliver. And the team works well together. And it's about efficiency, and it's about being in sync with each other, performing at a very high level, responsiveness. Knowing that, you know, DSI is a perfect example. If there's a problem, I know I can pick up the phone and you're going to be there.
Absolutely.
And that's what, you know, that's
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we've worked on a lot of projects together over the years, and, yeah. you know, I've worked with Nadia a lot, you know, mm-hmm. on your team as well. So we work together and collaborate a lot very often, and that's important too. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have those people you can count on and work together really nicely. Mm-hmm. Just makes the project a lot more enjoyable too, I think.
Absolutely. And enjoyable for the client. I always tell the client, like, this should really be fun. Mm-hmm. You're not building your office space. You're building your family home. In most instances, it's their family home, and it should be fun and positive and fun for all of us. You know, if the team is happy, it works. Everybody performs.
Absolutely. So you and I both work in fields that are dominated by men.
Yes.
So do you think that that's an advantage or a disadvantage to, you know, being a brilliant woman in this male-dominated industry?
I think it's a great advantage, and I really encourage women in this business because we're good at it. We're good at construction. We're good at multitasking. We're good at nurturing. You know, this is also these people are building their family homes, spending probably everything they have or a lot of what they have, and there are, you know, good moments and not so good moments, and so women are sort of well suited for it. But women are also some of the toughest people on the job site. And today, more and more, we're seeing women in the trades, and it makes for a really good, positive environment.
Absolutely. I find myself telling these guys too, I'm like, we need more women around here.
I recruit women. I look for women, and I'll, you know, I think it's the best way to build. I like to have a nice healthy mix on the job. I have a job right now. The contractor's female, the architects are female, the client is a female. And it's a great project.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Since we've obviously worked together on a lot of projects, mm-hmm. and yeah, what are some of those challenges that you face, you know, with in terms of, you know, subcontractors or, you know, issues along the project? You mentioned that there's been instances where you've had to take over a project because mm-hmm. it was not going well at all. So tell me more about that.
Well, I think the biggest issue we have is when the owner doesn't take counsel and wants to run the job the way they think they run it, that it should be run. And sometimes pick a subcontractor that's not appropriate for it, who's not up to the standards. They want an A-plus house, but they want to pay C-level prices and they can't understand why it's not right. And so I'm pretty big. I've learned lessons over the years that if I can't control the team, then I don't want to be on the team.
Right.
Because we won't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been sort of in the last few years, that's been my biggest takeaway from the last few projects I've done. You know, and I'm pretty clear to say to the client, to the owner, it's your money and it's your home, but you've hired this team for their expertise.
Right.
So trust the team.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of been the biggest thing.
A lot of the clients that both of us work with are high profile people of influence, mm-hmm. and many of them we can't talk about.
Right.
Who are some of the people that you've worked with that you can talk about, if any?
Well, no, I'll tell you, you know, when I first started in residential, our clientele was all Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
producers, studio heads, actors, really all Hollywood. And now our business is really businessmen, business people,
mm-hmm.
who've come into Los Angeles, and they're actually, it's a much more sort of stable market for us. So how you communicate with them is very different. They're really financially driven. A little less creative and more financially driven.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, you know, that's, I would say most of my business are successful business people who want to build a smart home, you know, architecturally significant, somewhat creative, but it's really a bit more practical. I have a client right now who wants to build a legacy home. A home that will be here 100 years from now, 200 years from now, that mm-hmm. those people will study. That's a very different approach. And that's, you know, like the dream job.
Sure. Yeah, that's very unique.
Yes, it is. And that's different from a lot of what's going to be built in the Palisades.
Mm-hmm.
In the Palisades, people are just building their family home back so they have a place to live.
Right. Right. So. Absolutely.
Discover why we're the most awarded home technology firm in the U.S. Our design-centric approach transforms your space with effortless control of lighting, motorized shades, audio, video, and more. Our friendly experts guide you every step of the way, no tech speak, just smart, stunning simplicity. We provide years of care from our award-winning service and support team. Experience technology that feels as good as it looks.
So kind of shifting gears here now, the Palisades fire, obviously, mm-hmm. just a very traumatic, devastating event in LA history. So how does your role change now when you're approaching, you have a client who's lost everything, mm-hmm. they've lost their homes, their personal artifacts. So how do you approach the rebuild process? How do you guide them through this and help them after they've experienced something like this?
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time sort of gathering our team, you know, gathering people we work with,
mm-hmm.
to be able to be resources to these people. You know, they did, like anybody, you don't know, like everyone thinks, I'll just go get an architect and I'll build. Well, it's not that easy. And so what we have spent these last few months doing is just pointing people in the right direction and making contacts. For most people, the first thing besides going through their insurance, the first thing they needed to know was, what can I permit? What can I design? What's 10% over? What does all that mean? And so we connected them with the right people. It's not, you know, we're not necessarily going to get a lot of work out of this because people really have tight budgets. Mm-hmm. But we do have the unique skill set to be able to guide them and help them. And, you know, we build big homes for very wealthy people. So it's nice to be able to give back
sure.
to people who otherwise would not work with us.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are facing a lot of challenges with this process. I mean, you know, insurance challenges mm-hmm. for many. So it's important to have someone like yourself to be there every step of the way and represent them and help guide them in a situation where they don't know what the next steps are. And like you said, you know, it's not just calling an architect and right. saying, I'm ready to build. Like, you know, there's a lot of steps that go into this process. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep homeowners motivated throughout this journey of the rebuild? There's obviously a lot of emotion involved.
Right.
And so how do you keep them motivated and informed through this?
I think it's about giving them a roadmap. Because they don't know. So you say, this is, you're going to clean your property, and then you're going to basically just giving them the roadmap of what's going to happen for the next 2 years. I was just talking to this woman the other day. She's like, we're so close to getting our permit, and then we're going to be in our house. I was like, well, it's going to take you like 18 to 20 months to build that house. They have a fairly large house. And she said, oh, really? Like in her head, they're halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you know what's in front of you for the next few years, it's manageable.
Sure.
You know, you can say, okay, I'm going to rent a house for so long. So that's a big part of what we do. And again, people don't know what the process is. So we help guide them in that way.
Sure. And a lot of people, you certainly don't want to be the first one back in your house, right? If everybody's building around you, you don't want to be in there with all the construction and everything too.
Right.
So I think that's good to educate people on the mm-hmm. timeline and set those expectations.
Right.
Especially if they do have temporary arrangements for mm-hmm. housing.
I think people underestimated how toxic it was there
mm-hmm.
and that there was no infrastructure. So great if you're the first one in, but you have no running water and you have no electricity and you have no trash pickup and no mail delivery. So there definitely was some learning for everybody to realize, mm-hmm. We need to actually follow the process. Many people called and said, I have plenty of money, get me in my house. Really, and then what?
Right.
You know, you're not going to have these other systems. So why don't you just slow down and do it right and, you know, kind of follow the process a little bit.
Yeah. And not to mention the immense amount of traffic to the area.
Ugh.
And when this is going to happen, I mean, Sunset Boulevard was already difficult enough mm-hmm. to get through. Now you have all the construction trucks and you know, people trying to get in to mm-hmm. do their work and
right.
tenfold because you have multiple people building at the same time.
Right, right.
So it goes beyond just building the house, right? It's like
right.
there's so many other parts and moving things that mm-hmm. have to happen in order for this to work.
Mm-hmm.
So will you be collaborating with your network of architects and contractors in planning for kind of this large scale rebuild, if you will?
Yeah, we've all spoken about it. Again, it's, we don't, you know, there of the number of homes there, 5,000 of them were like 1,500 square foot homes. It doesn't pencil to work with me.
Right.
It doesn't pencil to bring in the kind of level of contractors we work with.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we can do is help guide those people with our experience for no charge.
Sure.
And then there will be one or two that will say, now I want to build my dream home. Or in a few years, they're going to be the people that have bought up a lot of lots and they're going to say, oh, now I have three lots tied together and I'd like to build a giant home. Those are the people that we're going to actually go in and work with. The people right now, it's just, you know, again, just offering our experience and our resources and making phone calls. And, you know, it's tough. Resources are tough right now and people are busy right now. So if someone calls me and says, I really need an engineer, then I'll make a phone call for them and get them that engineer.
Sure. We're seeing a common trend that, you know, people are predicting that, you know, it'll be easy to get materials, but the labor to get, you know, all of these homes rebuilt, we're going to have potentially a labor shortage. And so, you know, when you consider all of those things and how much, you know, the labor shortage, and then you have the permits and the challenges with the city and the insurance challenges. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to process, especially for, again, for somebody who just lost everything and, you know, they're going through a lot. So, how do you advise your clients about, you know, hiring the right types of people for the job and making sure that, you know, the people who are brought in to do the labor aren't just, you know, unqualified people? How do you advise them?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that's the first thing we saw. We saw contractors from Texas and Colorado and Arizona coming in, and we're like, you don't know our codes. You don't, you know.
Right.
So that's a big, that's, you know, really a great question. And that's where I actually spend the most amount of time, is people call me and say, this is the architect I want to work with. This is the builder I want to work with. This is, and I vet them for, I help vet them or say, this is good, this isn't good. So it's a big, and it's going to continue to be a big issue for sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, expand on that a little bit. What do you see? What are some of your concerns that you see kind of with everything proceeding the way that it is?
Well, it's quality of work for sure. It's also shifting our market a little bit. You know, you don't want to, so on average in this market, it's let's just say it's $1,000 a square foot to build. And these people come from other markets and they say, but I can build your house for $400 a square foot. We know that's not sustainable in this market.
Right.
And so it skews everything. And then all of a sudden we're wrong, and you know, and but in fact, what we know, because we know about code compliance and we know about materiality and we all of that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and that's a situation where, you know, maybe they fall into that trap of somebody else can do it cheaper, and then halfway through the project they end up letting the team go and hiring somebody else to come in.
Right.
And at that point it's a whole mess.
So that's 50% of my business is coming in and fixing a project.
Okay.
This guy told me he could do it and it's a disaster. And then I have to go in and I assess everything, and 9 times out of 10 I say we have to change the team.
Right.
And because they hired the low guy or you know, or their cousin's neighbor, and you're like, well, they don't really build, but okay.
Exactly.
So that will definitely come into play for sure. I'm certain of that.
There's a lot of different kinds of homes in the Palisades too. Yes. I mean, you have, like you said, there's a bunch that are maybe, you know, your more modest homes that are smaller. And then you have up in the hills, you have a lot larger homes that, you know, you represent your clients for. Talk to me about that and how the Palisades has that unique character and charm, and not everything is, you know, the same. It's very unique.
Well, that's what we're hoping is preserved in the Palisades versus, you know, these developers who are coming in and buying up many lots, and they're going to kind of put the same. So we're hoping that the history of the Palisades stays intact. We'll see. You know, it's, you can build, you know, 5 homes at the same time for less, you know, with all the same materials for less than you can build 1 high-end custom home. So we'll have to see how that goes. There's nothing wrong with either one of them, but how do you preserve the uniqueness of the Palisades?
Exactly. And what you don't want to see is you don't want to see 100 of the same layout, you know,
exactly,
door by door. Yeah. So, you know, you want to preserve that charm.
Another part of the Palisades that was so beautiful was it was so old, all the foliage. And now people will be really reluctant to put trees all over the place. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, we do a lot of studies on hardened homes. And so we'll see how it all comes out. You know, the first homes are getting permitted now. They're mm-hmm. just starting to release permits. While everybody thinks, oh, the permits came out in 30 days, they didn't.
Right.
So they're just starting to come out now. So we'll see what's being built.
Yeah, and do you think that we're going to see a change or a shift in the choices that people are making in terms of architecture?
Yes.
I mean, shifting more toward concrete and mm-hmm. glass versus, you know, wood and that type of thing?
Yeah, definitely. As I said, like a hardened home. Mm-hmm. It's doesn't mean you can't build a traditional looking home, but it's out of different materials.
Right.
And certainly sprinklers and less foliage.
Absolutely.
Well, and the Palisades is unique in that it's a very high fire zone. So mm-hmm. a lot of people either were underinsured or had no insurance.
Right.
And so they're really, you know, I can't tell you many people called me and said, well, I have insurance, but I only insured it for $300 a foot. Mm-hmm. Well, that was probably perfect 30 years ago.
Right. Right.
But today it's hard. So now how do we do it? How are we creative and how do we help?
Absolutely. So. And, you know, there's to that point, there's a lot of people who, you know, maybe can afford to rebuild out of pocket and they don't need to rely on the insurance. But there's also a lot of people who can't afford to rebuild what they had before without insurance. And
right.
so they're running into these problems now where mm-hmm. they're not getting that back. And so they're like, well, what do we do now? We can't afford to rebuild what we had before. I mean, how do you help people through that?
Those people are selling to the developers.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. we thought that the lots would go like for pennies on the dollar, mm-hmm. but they're actually getting fair market for them.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are selling. A surprising number are selling.
Yeah. And why do you think that it's retaining its value? Is it just the,
well, I mean, it's the Palisades. It's beautiful.
Right.
And I think people see the long game, mm-hmm. you know, and I think mm-hmm. they say, I'm going to buy this piece of property and I'm going to sit with it for a few years.
Right.
And then I'm going to develop it mm-hmm. and then it's going to be worth. And I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So this isn't, everybody thinks we're like immediately going back in and building. Some people are, but a lot of people it's a long way out.
Yeah. And we've heard from other people too, that they estimate it'll probably take maybe a decade
yes.
to, mm-hmm. to fully come back and, mm-hmm. and have it fully done.
Yes.
So it sounds like that's kind of the consensus across the board is mm-hmm. we're looking at about a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it'll be a different kind of community. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of families. I had two different families that actually decided to just move out of California and all together. They were just like, well, we've lost our home, we've lost our school, our church, our dry cleaners, our grocery store. And so now we're just going to move.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting for all of that to be rebuilt, they have to get their children into school. They have whatever, you know, they have to go on with their lives.
Yeah. I mean, so there's people all over that are doing all kinds of different things and they're grieving differently and, mm-hmm. and they're working through this in different ways. And you know, coming together as a community to help rebuild, not even just the homes, but the businesses also mm-hmm. that were lost. And so it's going to take a collaborative effort all yeah. across the board.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would add is the people that this is our market. This is, you know, where we work mm-hmm. for our long careers. We view these people differently than these other teams that are coming in from out of California.
Right.
There's definitely, I'm seeing in the people that I work with, there's not this like desire to get rich. Mm-hmm. It's more of a desire to help. How can
right.
I help you? How can I help build back? How can I help my community?
Right.
So that's also something I'm very mindful of. Mm-hmm. If someone comes in and says, oh, we're going to build out, you know, and you could see them kind of licking their lips, I'm not interested in them.
Right.
And
right.
I will definitely dissuade the clients from working with them.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, we're not same here. You know, we're not mm-hmm. interested in that either. We just simply genuinely want to help contribute to helping these people get, you know, their homes back.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, so that's what it is at the heart of it all is coming together as a community and making this a group effort to rebuild.
Yeah.
So you know, to kind of wrap all of this up, if, you know, a homeowner or anybody who needs these resources is looking for them, how can you guide them to those resources? What can they do? Who should they be contacting?
Right. So I, you know, as soon as this happened, we put something out on Instagram and we reached out to all of our friends in the business and said, have them call us and we'll give them all of our resources. We'll give them this, like, step one, step two, steps, you know, and who to stay away from and, you know, just, We've offered to help put together budgets. We've connected a lot of people with renderers who, you know, because a lot of people don't know what they want and they don't know how to read blueprints and they don't know how to describe what their house used to look like.
Right.
And so we've connected people with with renderers who will draw that up for them. That's helped a lot. Mm-hmm. It's surprisingly how much it helps.
Yeah.
It's been a great resource for people. I wouldn't have thought of before, but, that's kind of first and foremost. We'll give you all of our resources. A lot of times also we'll make phone calls for people because the resources are busy.
Right.
So it helps to have an entree.
Right.
And it helps to say to call and say, these people are friends of mine and they really need your help. Or these people, this is what they're looking for. It's also hard to convey for a homeowner to convey what they're looking for because they don't know necessarily.
Right.
You know, to explain to someone, well, you need a soils engineer and they're like, what?
Right.
or you need Title 24 calculation. They don't, you know, they just don't even know.
That's why they need someone like you.
Right. Right. So we help with that, with just spelling that all out for them. And then there have been a few that we've spent a lot of time just making those phone calls and helping. And then they kind of get off on their own. And then they've called and said, well, we've decided, we do want to retain you. We do need your help all the way through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great too. But
yeah.
For right now, we're really just answering phone calls and we've reviewed a lot of contracts for people. It's a language you don't speak every day. So
right.
We review a lot of contracts, refer a lot of people and help put some teams together and hope for the best.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again, Beth, so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you.